Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4-Day Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains June 6th through the 9th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
When you've spent a decade bouncing between continents, boardrooms, and deadlines, the idea of a quiet retreat feels like a pipe dream. But transitioning from my global corporate job to freelance writing meant I needed that solitude to recalibrate. My life had been a nonstop swirl of schedules and demands, and I was desperate to unplug, literally. That's how I ended up renting an old cabin in the Adirondacks last September. The listing checked every box. Rustic charm, a cozy workspace, and complete isolation. The lack of cell service didn't faze me. I wasn't looking to scroll through emails or social media. The cabin had a landline for emergencies, and that seemed sufficient. I imagined crisp mornings sipping coffee, long afternoons typing away, and peaceful evenings under a blanket of stars. Reality didn't quite match the vision. The drive up was stunning. Early autumn had painted the Adirondacks in fiery hues of orange and red, and the crisp air a stark contrast to the muggy city. When I pulled into the gravel driveway, I immediately fell in love with the place. The cabin was small but charming, with weathered wood siding and flower boxes beneath the windows. Inside, it was as charming as outside. A wood-burning stove sat in one corner, an antique desk overlooked the forest through a large window, and there was even a little reading nook piled with cushions. I set up my laptop, unpacked my notebooks, and dove into work. For the first couple of days, everything was blissfully slowed down. I wrote for hours, took breaks to wander the trails nearby, and spent evenings curled up with a book by the fire. The cabin creaked and groaned in the way old houses do, but it was oddly comforting. I even found myself enjoying the silence. Then the storm hit. On the third night, a thunderstorm rolled in, battering the cabin with rain and howling winds. I decided to call it an early night, shutting my laptop and curling up with a mug of tea. The storm's ferocity made the cabin feel smaller, more enclosed, and I'd be lying if I said the isolation wasn't starting to feel a little heavier. Just as I was starting to doze off, the landline rang. The sudden loud ring of the phone made me jump. I wasn't expecting a call, and it felt out of place in the middle of nowhere. I let it ring twice before picking up. "Hello," I said, my voice hesitant. There was no response, just static. "Hello?" I tried again. The static faded and the line went dead. I stared at the receiver for a moment before placing it back on the cradle. Maybe it was a wrong number or some glitch from the storm. Still, it left a sour feeling in my stomach. The storm cleared by morning, leaving behind a soggy, overcast day. I stepped outside with my coffee, enjoying the fresh, earthy smell of rain-soaked leaves. As I walked toward my car to grab something from the trunk, something caught my eye, the phone line. It dangled limply from the side of the cabin, frayed and disconnected from the pole. I walked closer, squinting at the clean-cut edges. This wasn't storm damage, it looked deliberate. If the line was severed, how had the phone rung the night before? I tried convincing myself it wasn't a big deal. Maybe the line had been severed during the storm, but the edges didn't look torn. They were clean, as if they'd been cut. I felt nauseous just considering the possibilities. That evening, as the sun dipped below the trees, I told myself to forget about it. I cooked dinner, played some music, and tried to lose myself in my writing. But the cabin felt different now, like it wasn't just mine anymore. As I was washing up, I noticed something strange through the kitchen window. Muddy footprints. They trailed across the porch, leading directly to the window near my desk, the same window where I'd spent hours writing. I froze, staring at the footprints. They hadn't been there earlier in the day. Someone had been here, probably while I was cooking. I double-checked the locks, grabbed the biggest knife I could find, and retreated to the bedroom. I didn't sleep. I sat on the bed, the knife on the nightstand, jumping at every faint noise. Around midnight, a loud knock jolted me upright. It wasn't a casual knock. It was forceful, echoing through the cabin. My pulse raced as I crept toward the front door, knife in hand. "Who's there?" I called out, my voice giving away how nervous I felt. No answer, just the wind rattling the windows. The knock came again, this time harder. I peered through the peephole but saw nothing but darkness. My hands shook as I double-checked the locks and backed away from the door. The cabin felt like a trap, its walls too close, its windows too vulnerable. Morning couldn't come fast enough. As soon as the first rays of light broke through the trees, I packed my bags and loaded them into the car. My hands shook as I locked the cabin one last time and drove down the gravel path. At the end of the driveway, a utility truck was parked. A man in a hard hat was inspecting the severed phone line. "Excuse me," I called out, stepping out of the car. "Did the storm cause that?" He stared at the severed line, shaking his head. "Storm? No, ma'am," he said, pointing to the clean cut. "This line's been deliberately cut." A chill ran through me. He looked at me, then asked slowly, "Did you notice anything unusual last night? Footprints, noises, anything like that?" I hesitated, my pulse quickening, as I recalled the muddy prints on the porch and the knocks at the window. "Yeah," I admitted. "There were footprints leading to the window, and some knocking." "You need to leave," he said firmly. "We've had reports in this area. Criminals cutting phone lines to disable landlines so people have no way to call for help. Then they break into isolated cabins even when people are inside. They usually lock whoever's home in a bathroom while they search for valuables." I stared at him, the weight of his words sinking in. "But they didn't try to get inside," I said, more to reassure myself than him. He nodded, but didn't look comforted. "You got lucky. Real lucky. But if they were testing the place, there's a good chance they'll come back. I wouldn't stick around to find out." I thanked him and didn't waste another second. I drove straight to town, heart racing the entire way. As soon as I reached a safe spot, I contacted the host and the local authorities, reporting everything. The host refunded my stay and said they'd follow up with the authorities. I still think about that cabin, the cut line, and the muffled knocking. I've learned to be more cautious, to choose safety over seclusion. Solitude, as I found out, can sometimes bring more danger than peace. When you're a journalist, especially one always chasing offbeat stories, you learn to embrace the unpredictable. So when my editor pitched the idea of a piece on off-grid hermits living in the Catskill Mountains, I was all in. The prospect of interviewing people who'd turned their backs on society was fascinating. Who were they? What pushed them to abandon the modern world? These were the questions I wanted to answer. I rented a small cabin near the base of the mountains. It was the kind of place that looked like it belonged in a postcard. Tall pines framing a cozy wooden structure with smoke curling from the chimney. The cabin was a bit worn, but it had a certain charm, and its isolation was perfect for the assignment. The first few days were spent hiking, jotting notes, and arranging interviews. Most of the recluses I met were surprisingly friendly. They'd built their own shelters, grown their food, and seemed content in their solitude. But then there was this guy. Let's call him Dennis, for the sake of discretion. Dennis lived about 2 miles up a rough trail, far deeper into the woods than anyone else I'd visited. His home was a makeshift shack, held together with tarps and scavenged wood. He was wiry, with a scraggly beard and piercing eyes that seemed to drill into you. He was wary at first, questioning why I wanted to interview him, but eventually, he relented. The interview was unsettling. Dennis spoke in fragmented sentences, his words laced with paranoia. "People always want to take," he muttered, staring off into the trees. "They come with their cameras, their questions. They take and they leave. They never care what they leave behind." I tried steering the conversation back to his lifestyle, but he kept circling back to outsiders and how they ruined everything they touched. By the time I left, the sun was setting and the trail was getting dark. Dennis watched me go without a word, his silhouette blending into the darkening woods. 2 days later, I returned to my cabin after a long day of interviews to find a note nailed to the front door. The paper was weathered and the words scrawled in uneven, heavy handwriting, "Leave or regret it." I felt a tightness in my stomach. I looked around the clearing. Was this some kind of prank? One of the hermits not appreciating my questions? Dennis immediately came to mind, but I brushed the thought away. It could have been anyone. I tossed the note into the fireplace and decided not to dwell on it. After all, the cabin was locked, and I hadn't seen anyone on the trail. I told myself it was probably harmless. That night, as I edited my interview notes, I heard something outside. At first, it was just a branch snapping, maybe an animal. But then came the unmistakable sound of footsteps, slow, crunching the frost-covered ground. I turned off the lamp and sat in the dark, straining to hear more. The footsteps stopped. I waited, my heart in my throat, but the silence stretched on. Eventually, I convinced myself it was my imagination and went to bed. By morning, I noticed something odd. The cabin's front door had deep scratches near the lock. They weren't there the day before. I felt like all the air had been knocked out of me. Whoever had left the note hadn't just wanted to scare me, they'd tried to get inside. I contacted the rental agency, but they brushed it off, claiming local kids sometimes played pranks on tourists. But I didn't buy it. Instead, I bought a heavy-duty padlock and reinforced the door myself. That night, the noises returned. I peered out the window, but the clearing was empty. Then, just as I was about to turn away, something moved in the tree line. A shadow, tall and lanky, slipped between the trees, disappearing before I could get a good look. I stayed up until dawn, my nerves on edge. When daylight finally broke, I stepped outside to find boot prints around the cabin. They were deep, as if whoever made them wanted me to know they'd been there. By the fifth night, I was at my wit's end. I kept my phone charging on the table, a flashlight by my side, and a chair wedged under the doorknob for extra security. I tried to work, but my focus was shattered. The faintest breeze or noise from the cabin made me jump. Around midnight, I heard a sharp metallic scrape at the door. Metal against metal. Someone was messing with the lock. My breath caught as the door handle jiggled, followed by this low, guttural laugh. I grabbed my phone, ready to call 911. But before I could dial, bang. The sound slammed through the cabin like a gunshot. It wasn't the door. It came from the bedroom window. It was so hard, the whole pane rattled like it might shatter any second. I froze. Then it came again. Bang. And then the laugh. That same deep, awful laugh, but now it sounded closer. Like whoever was out there was really enjoying themselves. They didn't say a word. Nothing. Just the knock, the laugh, and the silence in between. And that silence? That was the worst part. It felt like they were watching me, waiting to see what I'd do next. Like I wasn't even a person, just some kind of prey, something to mess with. I sat there, gripping the flashlight so tight my fingers ached, straining to hear any hint of movement. And then I did. Footsteps. Slow, crunching footsteps, retreating into the woods. In the morning, I packed up, throwing my clothes and gear into my car without care. I didn't even bother notifying the rental agency. I just wanted to leave. When I reached the nearest town, I stopped at a diner to collect myself. The waitress, noticing my frazzled state, asked if I was okay. I told her about the cabin and the strange events. Her face paled. "Was it near Dry Creek?" she asked. "People around here don't go near that area," she said. "There's a hermit up there. Mean one. He's been known to scare off hikers and campers. They say he doesn't like outsiders." I reported everything to the authorities, but they didn't seem too concerned. "Hermits are just like that," one officer said. "They don't like their privacy invaded." I've since sworn off assignments involving isolated locations. The Catskills may be beautiful, but for me, they'll always be haunted by the memory of Dennis and the chilling reminder that some people will go to terrifying lengths to protect their solitude. Fieldwork in Alaska is unpredictable at best. You can plan for the weather, bring all the gear you need, and map out your route meticulously, but nature doesn't care about your schedule. That's how I found myself trudging through the Kodiak wilderness in August 2021, soaked to the bone and desperate for shelter. I was tracking a small group of Kodiak bears, documenting their behavior for a long-term study. Everything had been going smoothly until a storm rolled in. The rain came fast and hard, turning the dirt trails to slick mud and reducing visibility to near zero. I couldn't risk continuing, not with the terrain getting more treacherous by the minute. As I debated whether to set up a makeshift camp, I spotted a dark outline through the trees. Squinting, I realized it was a cabin. The cabin looked old, the kind of place that had seen better days decades ago. Its roof sagged in the middle, and moss clung to the wooden walls like a second skin. But it was shelter, and at that moment, that's all I cared about. I pushed open the creaky door, thinking it might come off its hinges any second. Inside, the air was stale, carrying the faint scent of mildew, rotten wood, and something metallic. The furniture was sparse. A wooden table, a few mismatched chairs, and a cot pushed against the far wall. Dust coated everything, except for a small section of the table where someone had clearly been sitting recently. There were signs of life here. A half-melted candle sat in the center of the table, next to a coffee mug with a faint ring of liquid inside. My initial relief began to curdle into unease. This wasn't just some forgotten cabin. Someone had been here, and not too long ago. I debated leaving right then and there, but the storm outside had intensified. Staying seemed like the safer option, so I told myself whoever used the cabin probably wouldn't mind me waiting out the rain. They might even be a fellow wildlife enthusiast, using the place as a base. As I moved around the room, I noticed there was a pair of mud-caked boots sitting neatly on a mat near the door. On the table was a notebook, its edges worn and stained. Curious, I flipped it open. The first few pages were filled with what looked like journal entries, brief notes about the weather, hunting conditions, and wildlife sightings. But as I kept reading, the tone shifted. The entries started mentioning people. Group of hikers passed the trailhead at 8:15 a.m., stayed out of sight. Solo camper set up near the river, watched him leave around noon. Woman with red jacket, alone, followed her to the ridge. My stomach tightened as I read. The descriptions were detailed, almost clinical, noting what time people arrived, what they wore, and which direction they went. Whoever had written this wasn't just observing, they were stalking. I put the notebook down, my hands shaking slightly. Outside, the rain was relentless, hammering against the roof and masking any other sounds. I looked at the boots again, its presence now feeling more threatening than reassuring. Then I noticed something else, a cupboard door slightly ajar. Inside, I found cans of food and bottles of water. But what caught my eye was a tin filled with fresh cigarette butts. Whoever used this cabin wasn't just passing through, they were actively living here. I decided I couldn't stay. The storm be damned, I wasn't about to wait around for whoever wrote those notes to come back. I packed up my gear quickly, my movements clumsy with nerves. Just as I was about to leave, a noise froze me in place. Rustling. Close. Too close. I extinguished my flashlight, plunging the room into darkness. My heartbeat echoed in my ears as I pressed myself against the wall, desperately listening. The rustling grew louder. I crept toward the window and peeked through a crack in the boards. In the dim light of the storm, I could make out a figure moving among the trees. They weren't in a hurry, their movements calculated. I couldn't see their face, but the way they carried themselves set every nerve in my body on edge. Then they stopped, turning their head toward the cabin. I ducked out of sight, my pulse hammering in my ears. I waited, crouched by the window. The footsteps got closer, and then I heard a voice. Deep, menacing, and full of anger. Who's in there? I didn't respond. My mind raced as I considered my options. Running meant exposing myself, but staying felt just as dangerous. The footsteps reached the porch, the old boards creaking under the weight. Come out, the voice demanded. I know you're in there. I barely breathed as the doorknob jiggled. The door held firm, thanks to the warped wood, but it wouldn't hold forever. I grabbed my pack and moved toward the back window, prying it open as quietly as I could. The door groaned as the figure outside started pushing against it. I slipped through the window and dropped into the mud, the storm masking the sound of my landing. Keeping low, I moved toward the tree line. As I reached the cover of the woods, I looked back. The door to the cabin was now open, and I saw a figure standing in the doorway. They didn't chase me. Instead, they just stood there, watching as I disappeared into the forest. I didn't stop moving until I was miles away. When I finally reached a ranger station the next morning, exhausted and still running on adrenaline, I reported everything. The cabin, the notebook, the figure. "Sounds like you stumbled onto someone's hunting spot," one of the rangers said. "Not uncommon around here." But their casual demeanor shifted the moment I mentioned the notes tracking people. "Wait, you're saying he was tracking people?" the older ranger asked, leaning forward. His tone wasn't casual anymore. "Yeah," I said, my voice shaky but firm. "Dates, descriptions, hiking routes, the whole thing. It wasn't just random notes." The younger ranger exchanged a look with him. "That's weird. Most folks out here just mind their own business. Keeping tabs on hikers, though? That's not normal." The older guy nodded, grabbing a map off the counter. "Can you show us where this cabin is?" I sketched out the location as best as I could, marking the trails I'd taken. They both promised to check it out later that day. That gave me a bit of comfort, knowing they weren't just brushing me off. "You did the right thing coming here," the older ranger said as I was leaving. "We'll look into it. But if you're smart, don't go poking around cabins out here anymore. Not everyone in these woods plays by the rules." I thanked them and headed out. I just hoped they'd find something and sort it out because, honestly, whatever was going on in that cabin, I wanted nothing to do with it ever again. I never found out what the man's intentions might have been. When I followed up with the rangers a week later, they told me the cabin had been abandoned when they checked it. The notebook and supplies were gone. I still do field work, but I'm far more cautious now. The wilderness is beautiful, but it's also unpredictable, and not just because of the wildlife. Sometimes it's the people you don't see that pose the greatest danger. After years of running into burning buildings, I learned to cherish peace and quiet like never before. That's what drew me to off-grid trips after retiring. The Blue Ridge Mountains had always been on my bucket list, so in November 2021, I finally made it happen, renting an off-the-grid cabin in the heart of the forest. It was everything I hoped for. The cabin was modest, just a living room with a wood-burning fireplace, a small kitchen, a bedroom, and a wraparound porch with a view of the dense treetops below. No cell service, no internet, just the sound of nature. Perfect. I felt really blissful. I'd wake up with the sunrise, make coffee, and set out for a morning hike. The trails were quiet. All I could hear was the dry crackle of leaves underfoot and the distant sound of a stream to keep me company. Evenings were spent curled up by the fire, a book in hand, with the fire crackling to break the silence. It was the kind of solitude that fills you up rather than making you feel alone. The nights were darker than anything I'd experienced before. Without city lights, the only illumination came from the stars and the faint glow of the moon. It was beautiful, but there was an edge to it, an awareness of just how far removed I was from anyone else. One night, I woke up to a faint tapping sound. It wasn't loud, just enough to pull me from sleep. Groggy, I sat up and listened. It sounded like it was coming from the window near the fireplace. My first thought was branches swaying in the wind. The forest was dense and the trees were close to the cabin. I made a mental note to check in the morning and went back to sleep. The next day, I inspected the area around the cabin. Sure enough, a few branches were close enough to scrape the windows if the wind picked up. I trimmed them back with a pair of clippers I'd found in the shed. Problem solved, or so I thought. That night, the tapping didn't return, but something else happened. As I sat by the fire, finishing a chapter of my book, I thought I heard faint footsteps on the porch. I told myself it was probably an animal, a raccoon, or maybe a deer wandering too close. Still, I couldn't resist checking. I opened the door slowly, stepping out onto the porch with my flashlight. The beam of light swept across the wooden planks and into the trees, revealing nothing but shadows. I was about to turn back inside when I noticed something on the edge of the porch. a single muddy footprint. It was small, too small for a bear or anything else that might have been out there. Before I could process it, a gust of wind swept through, rustling the leaves and sending a chill down my spine. I backed inside and locked the door. The next morning, I went back to the spot where I'd seen the footprint, but it was gone. The overnight wind and scattered leaves had erased any trace of it. I told myself I'd imagined it, yet the discomfort still hung in the air. That evening, around 11:30 p.m., I heard the tapping again. It was louder this time. The sound moved from the window by the fireplace to the one in the kitchen. I grabbed my flashlight and cautiously crept toward the kitchen. When I reached the window, I hesitated. My instincts told me not to look, but the urge to know more was too strong to ignore. I pulled the curtain back slightly and shined the flashlight outside. The beam caught the glint of eyes staring back at me, two unblinking eyes in the darkness. I staggered back, dropping the flashlight. By the time I scrambled to pick it up and aimed it outside again, the figure was gone. I spent the rest of the night by the fire, shotgun in hand, on edge. The wind howled through the trees, and I could swear I heard faint footsteps circling the cabin, though I never saw anything. Morning came, and I tried to rationalize what I'd seen. Maybe it was a deer, curious about the light, but deep down, I knew better. I decided to cut my trip short and leave the following day. On my final night, the tapping returned, but this time it wasn't just tapping. It was followed by scratching, like fingernails dragging across the glass. I sat frozen in the armchair by the fire, gripping the shotgun tight. Then I saw it, a shadow outside the window. It moved slowly, stopping directly in front of the glass. The firelight flickered, casting eerie patterns on the figure's face as it pressed closer. Summoning every ounce of courage, I raised the flashlight and shined it at the window. The light illuminated a human face, pale and emotionless, staring directly at me. For a moment, neither of us moved. Then, as if startled by the light, the figure turned and bolted into the woods. I sat in the armchair holding the shotgun all night until dawn. When I finally stepped outside, I found fresh footprints in the dirt, circling the cabin and leading back into the forest. I called the cabin's owner to report what had happened. His response was maddeningly dismissive. "Probably just a hiker," he said. "People wander through those woods all the time." "Wander through? At midnight? Watching me through the window?" I packed up and got out of there, leaving the cabin and its eerie woods behind for good. But that face in the window still haunts me. Whoever it was wasn't just passing by. They were watching, maybe even waiting. It's a feeling I'll carry with me, one I'll never be able to forget. If these off-the-grid nightmares left you on edge, don't forget to smash that like button and subscribe for more chilling stories. What would you have done in those situations? Share your thoughts in the comments. We'd love to hear your take. Send this video to a friend who swears they'd thrive off the grid and see if they still feel the same. Remember, isolation might sound peaceful, but it's not always as safe as it seems. Thanks for watching. And I'll see you in the next nightmare.